Chapter 88. A greater loss, it was not difficult for me, on Peggotty's solicitation, to resolve to stay where I was, until after the remains of the poor carrier should have made their last journey to Blunderstone. She had long ago bought, out of her own savings, a little piece of ground in our old churchyard near the grave of her sweet girl, as she always called my mother, and there they were to rest. In keeping Peggotty company, and doing all I could for her little enough at the utmost, I was as grateful, I rejoice to think, as even now I could wish myself to have been. But I am afraid I had a supreme satisfaction, of a personal and professional nature, in taking charge of Mr. Barkis's will, and expounding its contents. I may claim the merit of having originated the suggestion, that the will, should be looked for in the box. After some search, it was found in the box, at the bottom of a horse's nose bag, wherein, besides A, there was discovered an old gold watch, with chain and seals, which Mr. Barkis had worn on his wedding day, and which had never been seen before or since, a silver tobacco stopper, in the form of a leg, an imitation lemon, full of minute cups and saucers, which I have some idea Mr. Barkis must have purchased to present to me when I was a child, and afterwards found himself unable to part with, 87 guineas and a half, in guineas and half guineas, £210, in perfectly clean banknotes, certain receipts for Bank of England stock, an old horseshoe, a bat shilling, a piece of camphor, and an oyster shell. From the circumstance of the latter article having been much polished, and displaying prismatic colors on the inside, I conclude that Mr. Barkis had some general ideas about pearls, which never resolved themselves into anything definite. For years and years, Mr. Barkis had carried this box, on all his journeys, every day. That it might the better escape notice, he had invented a fiction, that it belonged to apostrophe Mr. Blackboy, and was to be left with Barkis till called for, a fable he had elaborately written on the lid, in characters now scarcely legible. He had hoarded, all these years, I found, to good purpose. His property in money amounted to nearly £3,000. Of this he bequeathed the interest of 1,000 to Mr. Peggotty for his life. On his decease, the principal to be equally divided between Peggotty, little Emily, and me, or the survivor or survivors of us, share and share alike. All the rest he died possessed of, he bequeathed to Peggotty, whom he left residuary legatee, and sole executrix of, that his last will and testament. I felt myself quite a proctor, when I read this document aloud with all possible ceremony, and set forth its provisions, any number of times, to those whom they concerned. I began to think there was more in the commons than I had supposed. I examined the will with the deepest attention, pronounced it perfectly formal in all respects, made a pencil mark or so in the margin, and thought it rather extraordinary, that I knew so much. In this abstruse pursuit, in making an account for Peggotty, of all the property into which she had come, in arranging all the affairs in an orderly manner, and in being her referee and advisor on every point, to our joint delight, I passed the week before the funeral. I did not see little Emily in that interval, but they told me she was to be quietly married in a fortnight. I did not attend the funeral in character, if I may venture to say so. I mean I was not dressed up in a black coat and a streamer, to frighten the birds, but I walked over to Blunderstone early in the morning, and was in the churchyard when it came, attended only by Peggotty and her brother. The mad gentleman looked on, out of my little window, Mr. Chillip's baby wagged its heavy head, and rolled its goggle eyes, at the clergyman, over its nurse's shoulder, Mr. Omer breathed short in the background. No one else was there, and it was very quiet. We walked about the churchyard for an hour, after all was over, and pulled some young leaves from the tree above my mother's grave. A dread falls on me here. A cloud is lowering on the distant town, towards which I retrace my solitary steps. I fear to approach it. I cannot bear to think of what did come upon that memorable night, of what must come again, if I go on. It is no worse, because I write of it. It would be no better if I stopped my most unwilling hand. It is done. Nothing can undo it. Nothing can make it otherwise than as it was. My old nurse was to go to London with me next day, on the business of the will. Little Emily was passing that day at Mr. Omer's. We were all to meet in the old boathouse that night. Ham would bring Emily at the usual hour. I would walk back at my leisure. The brother and sister would return as they had come, and be expecting us, when the day closed in, at the fireside. I parted from them at the wicket gate, where Visionary Strap had rested with Roderick Random's knapsack in the days of yore, and, instead of going straight back, walked a little distance on the road to Lowestoft. Then I turned, and walked back towards Yarmouth. I stayed to dine at a decent alehouse, some mile or two from the ferry I have mentioned before, and thus the day wore away, and it was evening when I reached it. Rain was falling heavily by that time, and it was a wild night, but there was a moon behind the clouds, and it was not dark. I was soon within sight of Mr. Peggotty's house, and of the light within it shining through the window. A little floundering across the sand, which was heavy, brought me to the door, and I went in. It looked very comfortable indeed. Mr. Peggotty had smoked his evening pipe, and there were preparations for some supper by and by. The fire was bright, the ashes were thrown up, the locker was ready for little Emily in her old place. In her own old place sat Peggotty, once more, looking but for her dress, as if she had never left it. She had fallen back, already, on the society of the workbox with St. Paul's upon the lid, the yard measure in the cottage, and the bit of wax candle, and there they all were, just as if they had never been disturbed. Mrs. Gummidge appeared to be fretting a little, in her old corner, and consequently looked quite natural too. "You're first of the lot, Master Davy." " said Mr. Peggotty with a happy face. "Needn't keep in that coat, sir, if it's wet." "Thank you, Mr. Peggotty," said I, giving him my outer coat to hang up. "It's quite dry." "So 'tis." " said Mr. Peggotty, feeling my shoulders. "As a chip. Sit ye down, sir. It ain't no use saying welcome to you, but you're welcome, kind and hearty." "Thank you, Mr. Peggotty, I am sure of that. Well, Peggotty," said I, giving her a kiss. "And how are you, old woman?" Laughed Mr. Peggotty, sitting down beside us, and rubbing his hands in his sense of relief from recent trouble, and in the genuine heartiness of his nature. "There's not a woman in the world, sir, as I tell her that need to feel more easy in her mind than her. She done her duty by the departed, and the departed knowed it, and the departed done what was right by her, as she done what was right by the departed. And it's all right." Mrs. Gummidge groaned. "Cheer up, my pretty mother," said Mr. Peggotty. But he shook his head aside at us, evidently sensible of the tendency of the late occurrences to recall the memory of the old one. "Needn't be down. Cheer up, for your own self, on ye little bit, and see if a good deal more needn't come natural." "Not to me, Dan," returned Mrs. Gummidge. "Nothing's natural to me, but to be lone and lorn." " said Mr. Peggotty, soothing her sorrows. Yes, Dan," said Mrs. Gummidge. "I ain't a person to live with them as has had money left. Things go too contrary with me. I had better be a riddance." "Why, how should I ever spend it without you?" " said Mr. Peggotty, with an air of serious remonstrance. "What are you talking on? Needn't I want you more now than ever I did?" "I know it I was never wanted before. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Gummidge, with a pitiable whimper, and now I'm told so. How could I expect to be wanted, being so lone and lorn, and so contrary? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Peggotty seemed very much shocked at himself for having made a speech capable of this unfeeling construction, but was prevented from replying by Peggotty's pulling his sleeve and shaking her head. After looking at Mrs. Gummidge for some moments, in sore distress of mind, he glanced at the Dutch clock, rose, snuffed the candle, and put it in the window. Fear! Apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty, cheerily. Fear we are, Mrs. Gummidge. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Gummidge slightly groaned. Light it up, according to custom. You're a wonderin' what that's fur, sir. Well, it's fur our little Emily. You see, the path ain't over light or cheerful arter dark, and when I'm here at the hour as she's a-comin' home, I puts the light in the winder. That, you see, apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty, bending over me with great glee, meets two objects. She says Emily, fear's home, she says. And likewise, says Emily, my uncle's fear. For if I ain't fear, I never have no light showed. Apostrophe, you're a baby. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Peggotty, very fond of him for it, if she thought so. Well, apostrophe, returned Mr. Peggotty, standing with his legs pretty wide apart, and rubbing his hands up and down them in his comfortable satisfaction, as he looked alternately at us, and at the fire. I didn't know but I am. Not, you see, to look at. Apostrophe, not exactly, apostrophe, observed Peggotty. No, apostrophe, laughed Mr. Peggotty, not to look at, but to consider on, you know. I didn't care, bless you. Now I tell you, when I go a-looking and looking about that fear pretty house of our Emily's, I'm gormed, apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty, with sudden emphasis fear. I can't say more, if I didn't feel as if the littlest things was her amest. I takes 'em up, and I put 'em down, and I touches of 'em as delicate as if they was our Emily. So 'tis with her little bonnets and that. I couldn't see one on 'em refused a purpose not for the whole world. There's a babby for you, in the form of a great sea porcupine. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty, relieving his earnestness with a roar of laughter. Peggotty and I both laughed, but not so loud. It's my opinion, you see, apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty, with a delighted face, after some further rubbing of his legs, as this is along of my havin' played with her so much, and made believe as we was Turks, and French, and sharks, and every variety of foreigners, bless you, yes, and lions and whales, and I didn't know what all, when she warn't no higher than my knee. I've got into the way on it, you know. Why, this here candle, now. Apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty, gleefully holding out his hand towards it. I know very well that arter she's married and gone, I shall put that candle here, just the same as now. I know very well that, when I'm here o' nights, and where else should I live, bless your arts, whatever fortin' I come into. And she ain't here, or I ain't here, I shall put the candle in the winder, and sit afore the fire, pretending I'm expecting of her, like I may doing now. There's a babby for you, apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty, with another roar, in the form of a sea porcupine. Why, at the present minute, when I see the candle sparkle up, I says to myself, she's a-looking at it. Emily's a-coming. There's a babby for you, in the form of a sea porcupine. Right for all that, apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty, stopping in his roar, and smiting his hands together, for here she is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it was only ham. The night should have turned more wet, since I came in, for he had a large sou'wester hat on, slouched over his face. Where's Emily? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty. Ham made a motion with his head, as if she were outside. Mr. Peggotty took the light from the window, trimmed it, put it on the table, and was busily stirring the fire, when Ham, who had not moved, said, Master Davy, will you come out a minute, and see what Emily and me has got to show you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, we went out. As I passed him at the door, I saw, to my astonishment and fright, that he was deadly pale. He pushed me hastily into the open air, and closed the door upon us. Only upon us two. Ham. What's the matter? Apostrophe, Master Davy. Apostrophe O, for his broken heart, how dreadfully he wept. I was paralyzed by the sight of such grief. I don't know what I thought, or what I dreaded. I could only look at him. Ham. Poor good fellow. For heaven's sake, tell me what's the matter. Apostrophe apostrophe, my love, Master Davy, the pride and hope of my ardor, that I'd have died for, and would die for now she's gone. Apostrophe apostrophe, gone. Apostrophe apostrophe, Emily's run away. Oh, Master Davy, think how she's run away, when I pray my good and gracious God, to kill her that is so dear above all things, sooner than let her come to ruin and disgrace. Apostrophe apostrophe, the face he turned up to the troubled sky, the quivering of his clasped hands, the agony of his figure, remain associated with the lonely waste, in my remembrance, to this hour. It is always night there, and he is the only object in the scene. You're a scholar, apostrophe he said, hurriedly, and know what's right and best. What am I to say, indoors? How am I ever, to break it to him, Master Davy? Apostrophe apostrophe, I saw the door move, and instinctively tried to hold the latch on the outside, to gain a moment's time. It was too late. Mr. Peggotty thrust forth his face, and never could I forget the change that came upon it when he saw us, if I were to live 500 years. I remember a great wail and cry, and the women hanging about him, and we all standing in the room, I with a paper in my hand, which Ham had given me, Mr. Peggotty, with his vest torn open, his hair wild, his face and lips quite white, and blood trickling down his bosom it had sprung from his mouth, I think, looking fixedly at me. Read it, sir, apostrophe he said, in a low shivering voice. Slow please. I didn't know as I can understand. Apostrophe, in the midst of the silence of death, I read thus, from a blotted letter. When you, who love me, so much better than I ever have deserved, even when my mind was innocent, see this, I shall be far away. Apostrophe, I shall be far away, apostrophe he repeated slowly. Stop. Emily far away. Well. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.